Hey everybody, it's Megan Reardon-Jarvis and I am back with an episode of Grief Is My Side Hustle. This episode got lost in the ether and I am so delighted to be bringing it to you now, though you are going to be like, holy moly, it took them a long time to produce this one. I get to speak to Lindsay Kane Leverton on Valentine's Day of this past year. I fell madly in love with her. I was really compelled by her story. When you listen to this episode, you're just going to kind of hear the whole of me, all the things that I think and feel. She and I did not have a lot of filters between us. She is extraordinary. Please listen to the whole episode. You get a little snippet of her extraordinary talent as a singer-songwriter. I'm not going to give you too many spoilers. She is the author of a book called Not Another Self-Help Book. It's an incredible, really creative, personal memoir story of the way in which she has managed change and loss in her life. So I hope you love it. Lindsay, thank you so much for this episode. I'm sorry it took us so long to get it out there. Honestly, it's one of my favorites. Welcome to Grief Is My Side Hustle. I am already having the best Valentine's Day now. It won't be when you listen to this, and then you'll just realize how long it takes us to get our production asses in order. But it is Valentine's Day, and I am having a sweet little love affair with my guest who is here with me today, Lindsay Kane Leverton. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled. I love that you've already cussed at least three times, so I feel at home on this podcast. I was speaking at an event a couple weekends ago, and I asked one of the people, you know, do you think I can cuss from stage? Almost as a joke.
Yeah.
You know, that you should know what you're getting into when you have me anywhere. And one of the ladies goes, I don't think so. It's being recorded. I was like, then you booked the wrong person.
I'm so sorry for you because you're going to be shocked in that recording.
Yeah.
And I drop all
my you're going to be uncomfortable. Yeah. No, it's a mutual admiration society here with you, Megan.
I'm very lucky to have you. And one of the greatest things about a podcast is I get to learn about people who I'm then going to stalk online and force to be my friend.
You don't have to force me. I'm already there.
Oh, so great. So I want to jump in with a question that I always start with, which is what brings you into the world of grief and loss?
Ooh, that's a great question. I love that it's
40 minutes just on this one with you.
You could, and I do not have the gift of being succinct. I've never been accused of being succinct. I'm the most verbose human, I'm afraid, possibly on the planet. So easy answer. Of grief and loss, right? Mm-hmm. I wish that I could actually, no, I don't wish I could just point to one thing, because who I am today is a culmination of all of the different trauma moments, capital T trauma, small t trauma, pain and loss. But I think probably if I had to go back and figure out what was the original wound, what was the most compelling, most life-changing loss that I had, it would probably have to be when I came out to myself when I was 17. Mm. I grew up in evangelical Christianity where, you know, I signed a purity pledge, was, you know, saving myself for marriage. I really wanted to lose my virginity to Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
But he is not
good token.
Called me back, you know, or anything. Coming out to myself, that was really hard because that was a loss of what I thought my life was going to look like. It was a death of a dream that I grew up thinking, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to meet a man, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have babies, I'm going to someday learn how to cook, you know. And so that was just a big loss. I started grieving that awareness that I had. I remember saying to myself, oh shit, I think I'm a lesbian. So I went into ex-gay therapy, just both feet, trying to figure out a way to honor the Lord while still having what I called at the time, same-sex attraction, because you didn't want to say homosexuality.
The
you know,
same-sex attraction.
Uh-huh. Abomination, all this. Mm. And unsuccessfully tried to pray the gay away.
Yeah.
Even had a moment in college where I just didn't want to be alive anymore. It was too painful to, you know, I was doing ministry. I was touring and leading worship and speaking and teaching. and just going further and further into the closet. The second, that was my entry point into loss. But as I got deeper and deeper into the closet, my career was growing and growing. I was, you know, touring 200, 250 dates a year in some cases. And then I started the coming out journey in 2009. And I had a crazy journey with reconciling my faith with my sexuality, because I thought it was an either or proposition. You can't have your faith and also like chicks. You know, you got to pick. Thankfully, through a lot of years of challenging what I'd been taught growing up, I was able to find that third way, which is I can still have a relationship with my higher power, who I call God, source, love, intelligence, whatever, insert name here. And I can also be unashamedly who God created me to be, gay and all. And started coming out in 2009. And my then partner at the time, her mom, just, we thought she was going to be cool and she wasn't, and proceeded to out me quite publicly. And within the course of about 3 weeks, I went from touring. This was my full-time job for 6 years. I'd recorded 7 albums, had a successful career, a business, and I was unemployed within 3 months, 3 weeks, and started waiting tables at a seafood restaurant, picking up breadcrumbs for less than minimum wage. So the loss of most of my family, the loss of all my friends, the loss of my career that I had built, you know, since I was 17, the loss of my identity. Who was I if I wasn't touring and singing? So that was the greatest loss. And you know what, Megan? What's interesting, as I sit here today with you, what I'm going through now, the loss and grief I'm experiencing now in my life, real time, is harder and more challenging and more painful than all of that combined. So our conversation is very timely.
Wow. I want to ask a million other things, but do you want to tell us more, a little bit more about the present day loss? If you were just to name and claim it, what does it sound like?
Name and claim it. That's so funny. Yep. That reminds me of my old days. Name it and claim it.
Name it and claim it.
You have cancer. Well, no more, because we're going to claim it. I want to drive a Bentley. We're going to name and claim it.
I really like the concept of witnessing grief. This is something that's like evolving in me in the moment. I heard Kate Bowler talk about this. I listened to some intuitives talk about this, but we talk a lot about validating grief, which is like me tapping your grief and being like, I see that. I see that over there. That's real. You make sense to me. That's real. Witnessing is, I am standing here in this moment. It has so much more empathy and compassion, I think, in its concept to me. And I feel like validation maybe doesn't really work. I think witnessing is the only thing that works. Like, I can validate you and be totally on the other side of the rope from you.
Right.
But I can't witness, I can't see it if I'm not on that. If I'm not under the rope and on your side.
Yeah. It's like jumping into the valley with me instead of looking over from your mountaintop being like, I see your grief. You'll be fine. Pick yourself up by your bootstraps. But when a friend jumps in the valley with me, doesn't say a word.
That's right.
That's crucial.
That's right.
I don't think you can be witness.
Sorry. I don't think you can be witnessed by someone who is not a spiritual companion, like someone who you trust. Whereas I think a lot of people I think a therapist that you don't even really could validate your experience and try to hold space for all those words that, you know.
Oh, yes.
But I think witnessing is more about the higher power, holy act of what's the purpose of other humans, if not to hold each other in communion in space, in the pain.
You have to. That's the component, the community piece that you just mentioned. I think that's what was so hard about losing everything in 2009 was that was my community.
Yeah.
I really just had, you know, my dog and my partner at the time. Another thing before I do name what I'm going through right now, you mentioned compassion. I didn't make this up, so I have no idea what the source is, but you know, passion, the meaning of that is pain, right? And struggle.
Yeah.
Compassion is almost like co-joining with somebody in their struggle. So I love that word, witnessing, and then also compassion. I'm not just seeing your grief from this proximity far away, but I'm just right beside you, holding you, like you said, holding space for you. That's been huge. That's been so huge.
Yeah.
So legally, I can't go into much detail because it is a divorce.
Yeah.
And it will be my second. And, you know, I thought that I met the one, right? The love of my life, the one that I would grow old with. Our wedding was beautiful. It went viral. We got married at a drive-in movie theater at the beginning of COVID. We were on the Today Show and in People magazine. It was insane. You know, I thought, is it a slow news week? Why is this so amazing?
We're suckers for romance.
Look, I'm telling you, it quickly took a turn and our family was just decimated by mental illness. And there was a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder with my wife. And that's about all I can say at this point, but we are going through a divorce and it is not amicable. So that has been honestly a nightmare.
I bet. And that feels really fresh. That feels like it's, and here we are talking on Valentine's Day. So just to.
And it's okay. It's weird. I've grieved. That's what I also love about grief is that I've grieved so much over the past few years.
Yeah.
For about going on 4 years, maybe 3.5 years, that it just hits differently now.
Yeah.
I'm moving through these, you know, not that you move through stages. Obviously, I don't have to tell you this. It's not linear. But there will be days I have grief bursts.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I thought we had moved through that. And then all of a sudden I'm, you know, crying while watching a waffle pop out of the toaster.
Yeah.
And it just hits you.
Yeah. I wish there was some neuroscience to explain us that to us. Like, why does it happen on a Tuesday at 2:30? And I was fine. Right. You know, what
yes.
built up in me. And so I have a million questions. I want to go back for a second because I just want to ask this question. Like sometimes on the podcast, I'm like, oh, let me lead you towards this very important clinical topic. Most often what happens is I'm really curious about this and I want to ask about it. When you were in the process of coming to understand your sexuality in a community that you knew was not going to be okay with that, can you talk a little bit about, and I really want this for our audience, what that does to a person, right? Like we've had people come on here and talk about what it's like with a mother telling you that, you know, you need to be thinner or what it's like to, I really want to understand for someone who deeply believes in a loving God, how can you possibly get right with the idea that loving God would hate you or not like you or not approve of you or want you to be other than you are? Like, and in my experience, it's often 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds who, you know, they're walking into assembly with an entire community of people who are all, you know, wearing rings and making pledges, and everybody else gets this community and belief system. What does it make you hate yourself? Does it make you hate God? Like you can't, who gets out alive in that? When you were going to try to pray the gay away, were you the problem? Was your desire the problem? Was what God? You get my question?
I 100% get your question.
Yeah.
And it's a really good question and super multi-layered.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to tackle the first thing that came to my mind, which is sometimes not the best thing, but we're going to go with it anyways. I hated myself.
Okay.
I hated the part of me that I hated the part of me that had the quote struggle. So when you are so deep into a certain faith, there was a brainwashing element. I didn't know it was happening. I don't believe that Sunday school teachers were being nefarious. It's just, you're in that world. That's all I knew. I had no idea that there was this other world out there.
Right.
So you grow up believing that life looks like this. Life is black and white. Relationships are black and white. The world is binary. There's no gray. And so as I'm growing up, you know, feeling really different, feeling out of place, I started not to hate myself, but the part of me that struggled with the same sex attraction. So I was able to almost separate that part of myself. I was very disintegrated. You know, there was no wholeness to me.
Yeah.
I saw it as my sinful nature. So you grow up thinking you were born a sinner. You need a savior. That's textbook 101 evangelical Christianity. And then you read in the Bible about Paul talking about the thorn in his side. He lived with this, quote, thorn in his side. You know, there's much speculation about what that was. So then you just explain it away. This is the thorn in my side. This is my sinful nature.
This is this.
I didn't hate God.
Okay.
Even though I knew that this is how he's created, I thought, I guess this is my struggle. And when you grow up in the church I did, it's not if you suffer, it's when you suffer. The more you suffer, the closer you are to God.
Oh, I see. There's some holiness in that, right? Oh, I see. The more the plague you have, the more God must, you. The closer you, God is close because he's carrying
so
you
close.
With the footprints
so
and the
close.
Sand and all the stuff. Okay.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. Just, you know, picking me up on the beach, there's one set of footprints. I'm like, no, I probably ran off the beach after some cute lifeguard, you know? So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
It does. Keep going.
Yeah. So I think because I had, even though it was very misguided in certain parts, I have always had a very real, authentic, deep, loving relationship with my higher power. I knew that God loved me, but I also knew that it never made sense. I could never make it fit. It never, ever made sense, but I kept trying to force it to make sense. Okay, no, I can't be like this. This is a struggle. I went so far as to get engaged to a wonderfully loving Christian man in college because I thought, I'm not a cheater. I'll get married. I'll be loyal. This will give God time to remove this thorn from my side. Okay. And then there was a night in college where, you know, I write about this in the book, but I was sitting next to my fiance and then my best friend was on my other side. I was in love with her, not him. And that was the night I prayed, you know, a prayer that I'm so glad did not go my way, but I was like, God, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I've tried all the ex-gay therapy. I used to fast once a week to pray the gay away, you know, sneaking in CDs for the younger audience. CDs were how we used to listen to music and silver discs. And I just prayed that God would either kill me in my sleep or wake me up straight, that I was done struggling. I couldn't do it anymore. I could not live another day splintered, hiding this secret and still like having this really real love for God and wanting to spread hope, you know, to people's lives. And I woke up the next morning and, you know, still gay, gayer than ever. And that's really what led me into counseling that was not ex-gay reparative therapy related. And I started questioning, I may have gotten this wrong. Like all the people that I'd listened to, all this scripture, the clobber passages that are used against people in the LGBTQ community, I started digging into the original language and asking God, what do you think about it? And a lot of crickets when you ask what Jesus thinks about it, a lot of crickets, but a lot that Jesus feels about helping the poor and welcoming our neighbors.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
And, you know, strangers in foreign lands. And yeah. It was an intense journey and it took years and years.
But there's something in there that feels that I have like little sparks of, oh, thank God, not ironically, but you saying, no, I understood I was loved by God. I just thought maybe I was like mixing my signals, listening to the wrong people, trying in the wrong bucket.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, and that your path then is going to be a path that has some destruction. But it isn't, right? That it isn't, you didn't take on wholly all the way the idea that God didn't love you. Because that, you know, the spiritual betrayal, and I said to you before we got on the mic, and some of the community know that I was raised in a church outside of Boston that, you know, had one of the perpetrator priests move to it. And, you know, part of the legacy of holding on to that is that it destroys the sense of connection to the rituals, right? To the safety inside the buildings or the systems or the And I've been running around, you know, I'm still on this journey. You talk to me in 5 years, it's going to be something else. But, you know,
I would like to talk to you in 5 years for one.
Yeah, no, we're going to live together, not in Texas, but we'll be.
That's right.
I'm building a commune. You can come with your ducks. Yeah. But I'm still finding my way through the place. And I don't, I always had this idea that the math either was you hated yourself or you hated God. Mm. Because my experience still with it is like, what kind of a God inside a house that was meant to represent, you know, what are you talking about? Like, how could that be the case? Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer. Stephen Fry, the actor and sort of genius, talks about the reason he knows that there isn't a God is because what kind of a God would give a child leukemia? And he talks about, he has this unbelievable interview where I don't know that I'm going to get anywhere towards it, but I like hearing you say maybe what I'm hearing you say, which is really filling me up, is maybe you got to go back to the God inside of you, the love that's yours, that was given.
The divine inside of you.
And that maybe that's where the compass, I have a lot of chills when I'm saying that, like maybe that's where the compass points come from. And I probably know that, that the wandering around from church to church, which is something that I've done, and then no, I'm not doing church anymore. And that maybe the stone cold center is whatever it is that doesn't get taken away regardless of what people say or do.
Yes. I think it's the essence of love, intelligence, that source of creative energy, whatever the universe. I just don't really care about a name. Yeah. Whereas I used to, right, think, oh, Jesus is the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father except through them. So now I have completely reimagined my relationship with a higher power and faith in general. But it was that tiny little light inside me that I was born with that got demolished.
Yeah.
And I threw the baby out with the bathwater. And then I started slowly walking back into that wounded child, doing a lot of that wounded child, inner child work. And I had to lose God to find them. I had to be kicked out of all the churches and lose my community.
Also all your community. That's not the average Joe's experience. You were a leader because of your music inside this community. People were looking at you, which puts you at a, you know, a higher, you know, that's a high Smokey the Bear fire risk right there.
Yes.
And they burnt you to the ground in order to keep their, you know, restore the order of what they needed to preserve for all the things.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Because I broke their brain. They didn't know how to reconcile this woman who they'd grown to love.
Exactly.
They had connected to God through, and then now I'm a lesbian? Wait, what? It was like record screeching.
And I can appreciate, I'm going to be careful how I say this.
That
feels like a betrayal to them. If they believe, you know, if they have homophobia and believe that hashtag blessed and, you know, all the things, like if I just, you know, tithe more and pray more and, you know, prosperity Bible bullshit, if I'm going to do all that to discover that the person that was helping, you know, was the bridgeway to them feeling spiritual through music was actually someone they were supposed to hate.
A question I got a lot was, why are you still fucking with church? Because I still would sing some here and there. I don't go to church anymore, but, you know, would lead worship at some open and affirming churches here. And I said, because my higher power never left me, even though his people, quote unquote, people, little C Christians, wanted to shit all over me, you know, and I don't say that as a victim, just as reality. I never got that sense from God, the God of my understanding, who I know now. But when I finally admitted that, oh my gosh, there's not some God up there pulling the strings and choosing which kids get leukemia and which don't, fuck all the way off. Not everything happens for a reason.
No way.
And I'm tired of hearing it. And I will preach that till the cows come home. Sometimes shit just happens and there are gifts we can find. Sometimes there won't be gifts.
Yeah.
But to me, that was the most freeing realization, was that I get to design my faith and how I believe life works, however the hell I want to.
So interesting, because I've worked as a trauma therapist for 20 years, and I would say that the gift of working as a trauma therapist for me is the holy experience of being in really intimate, vulnerable places with people and being able to see the true humanity inside there. Yeah. I had this conversation with a young woman. She was in her early 20s. She had gone to a Christian university and she was going to become a minister in her community. And their requirement was that she raise her salary. She had to amongst her community. So we went to lunch and I said, tell me about the work that you're doing. And it was incredible. It was extraordinary work. And then I said, okay, and what happens if someone inside your college community comes to you and says, I believe that I may be attracted to someone of the same sex? Mm-hmm. And she said, we believe it's a sin. And I was like, we have to be done. This whole conversation has to be done. And I could say, right? So I'm in this space of deep love for this young woman. And I've been in this space with clients so many times where, like, I am seeing the struggle that you are having live right in front of me.
Yeah.
Want to pursue helping, and that you also need to believe that there are some people that are worthy of help and some people who are not worthy of help. And that is not the way it works. Mm-hmm. But she said it, and I was like, first of all, I just want you to know I love you. Second of all, I want you to know that you are wrong. And here's how
good
I know
you.
I have 3 children that I love with a blinding, irrational, painful, confusing, wild, hot heat passion. And I couldn't give a crap who they do anything sexual with when that time comes. And mm-hmm. I'm not even anything like God.
And
I'm not
you're
even
a human, a fallible human.
If I am capable of this much crazy ass love for these 3 little rugrats that, mm-hmm. you know, they're not even old enough to say what we call in our house grown up feelings. I was like, I just know you're so wrong. I can't give you money to keep going down that path. And the weird thing is, as a therapist, I'm like, no judgment. But in this one, I'm judging you. It's just, you're asking me to support your belief that the world is flat. And
yeah,
I just,
nope,
I can't put money in that place because it is not correct. There is no way it could possibly be correct.
No. Can you imagine a God up there? Okay, we're going to create 10% of the people that I create are going to have to be celibate and die alone. Okay. Can you imagine, even in your situation with the 3 kids?
Yeah.
Hey, Megan, which kid gets leukemia?
Yeah, exactly.
So exactly. I just, you know, I understand why people try to help people in grief. I'm sure you've heard it a billion times. I'm sure people listening to this podcast have heard it. Meaning people most of the time say everything happens for a reason. It'll, you know, you'll all da 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 da.
God doesn't give you more than you can handle.
Oh, that's my favorite.
I'm sorry. What about all the addicts? What about all the people who are having heart attacks? What about the people? God, absolutely. I think maybe every day. Maybe just life. Maybe God's not even doing it. Maybe just like life can every day be more than I can.
Life is going to keep lifing. That's what life does. It's sorrow and it's joy, and they're inextricably linked, and we'll have highs and lows sometimes within the same minute. And we're holding all of this together. And no wonder people in droves are leaving any type of faith community. I don't just mean, you know, Christianity, but it's not working anymore. The old tired belief that there is some God pulling the strings, and these 20 people did a prayer circle for Jane and she was miraculously healed from cancer. And these 20 people with just as much faith pray over their friend Carol dies of cancer. You want to go tell the kids in Ukraine that everything happens for a reason? You want to go tell, you know, people in the Gaza Strip everything happens for a reason? Come on. That's life. Yeah. Shit happens, you know?
I think our inability to feel helpless is just like really bad.
Yeah.
I think we have implied, and maybe it's even bad in like the Western world. You know, we pull ourselves up
especially
from our bootstraps. We mm-hmm. work 79 hours a week. Like we, mm-hmm. but there are these things. And like the death of someone that you love, or the end of a relationship, or the, you know, rejection from a college, or you didn't get the part in the play, or that person that you love does not love you back. Those are things that we do not have agency over, which is interesting because also I can't make strawberries grow, you know? So there is like this holiness in the things that we have no agency over that I think we sometimes miss. I think we miss that maybe that's where God is supposed to be. Not that we're supposed to, God is supposed to be like, if you pray enough, then God's going to give you a Cadillac. But instead, your daughter has an illness that nobody is promising anything about. And so in that dark of night, that's what Anne Lamott writes about. That's what Glennon writes about is in those moments that you don't have to believe that you can control them, but that you don't have to be in them totally wholly by yourself.
Nope, you definitely don't. And I, in my darkest moments, that is when I have felt the closest to that light and that hope and that comfort. And if I'm looking for it outside myself, I'm not going to find it. Yeah. You know, it's me going internally and honoring the spirit that I was born with and the soul that gives me a lot of life and hopefully my kids and other people. Yeah. But I have found that every day, there is more on me than I can handle. Yeah. And if that wasn't the case, then I would just go handle it. I'd be this egomaniac. I'm just, you know, owning it. No, when I get surrendered and when I let go and I say, Uncle, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore. I need help. And you're reaching out. Like, to me, that's where the magic happens, is the space between the trauma. Like, you have the space between the notes in a song. You have the space between the logs in a fire. Yeah. To me, that's where really the magic happens. And nobody's pulling any strings. Nobody's controlling anything, but you're not alone. I would rather someone tell me, you're not alone. Love is enveloping you, regardless of if you feel it or not. I'd rather hear that than, God will never put on you more than you can bear. And everything happens for a reason. Yeah.
I know those phrases. Those phrases make us feel really alone, right? Because it's, if you are feeling bad or you are feeling, you know, too overwhelmed, or you must not be doing your grief or your religion right or whatever right, because if you were doing it right, then you wouldn't feel those things. And so again, I have this phrase that I use with my clients all the time, which is hard things feel hard, or it was always going to be this way. Like, it was never, whatever idea that you had, people will always inevitably, I get, today is one of them, hundreds of emails from people that are like, my partner is not here. My mother is not here. My son is not here. They've died. How do I get through X day? And what I say always is, with all the pain of the day, because what they mean is, how do I get through the day with less pain is what they mean.
Yes.
We don't get it with less pain. We just get the day. That's it. That's all we get. And so whatever it is you need to do to get through the day, you will never have to do this day again. Do the day. If that means watching Mad Men, if that means eating pints of ice cream, if that means whatever, you know, do the least amount of destructive stuff to your body as possible, because that stuff has to get cleaned up. And I know lots of people where their addictions began because they had to chase away a feeling. So I'm not trying to minimize that. But I do think part of what we can sometimes hear, whether it's from our company that only gives us 3 days off to grieve, you know, a death, and gives us 0 days off to grieve a marriage or, you know, a relationship, or when we didn't get the promotion, they still expect to see us on Monday. That message that we get from 3 days off is, you need to be better by Monday. You need to be fully functioning by Monday.
Why are you still sad? Why are you still sad 10 years later? Because that's how loss is. You don't get over it. You know, you just learn to live your new normal.
Yeah.
Oh man. I love that. Getting like whatever you have to do to get through the day.
Get through the day. You know, like, maybe you'll come up with a ritual down the line, but even if you start the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation and raise billions of dollars, that doesn't mean you're not going to cry on the anniversary of your sister's death. Right.
That's right.
We don't get to circumnavigate the pain of things.
Yes.
We have to bear them. And I wanted to ask this question. I have two questions I want to get to, but one I want to ask is, can you talk to me about the role of music in your life and how that maybe is a part of this? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but.
Gosh, I don't know who said this, so you might have to check my source, but when words fail, music speaks.
Yeah.
So there, I think now I've written, I don't know, over 150 songs since I was 17. I started writing songs. The reason I started playing music was because we moved from Midland, Texas, which is a West Texas town, to Austin, the middle of my junior year in high school. That was another element of loss that was really tough. And I had no friends. The basketball gym was closed. So I grabbed my mom's guitar, started teaching myself how to play the guitar, and I fell in love with it. And I'd written, I think, 12 songs within a year, recorded my first album when I was before I went to college, and then kept writing. For me, just like writing this book was the medicine over the last few years, anytime I could get my hands on a guitar, a piano, and write and create, not even for anyone else, just to heal, the music element of my life, I think, saved me on more occasions than I'm even aware of. To me, there is no journey of mine, past, present, future, that will not be, you know, linked to music. And that's why in the book, between every chapter, I wanted it to be an experience. Every chapter has an adult coloring book page, which is inappropriate.
Oh, great.
And then a QR code that will send the reader to one of my original songs that aligns with the chapter. So you essentially, you know, it's an album coloring book all in one, but the music, I think the music is like water when you need to water a seed.
Yeah.
Where experiences can't do it, words can't do it. There's something about music that that just plants it a little bit deeper into our souls.
God, that's such a good, and I was, the coloring was what I was going to also ask you about, because when I'm talking to grievers, so this is just my little two cents. We've never really educated anybody about what grief is, how it impacts the 12 systems in the body. Unlike if you said to me, I want to run a 5K, we could Google and it would give you 700 people who were giving you advice on how to, you know, run a 5K. If we said, how do I grieve my mother? And we put that into Google, we're just going to get a whole bunch of nonsense because I've Googled that, and maybe the names of some memoirs and grief books. But
hopefully
what we
yours
don't,
at the top.
Right, exactly. Mine's at the top. What we don't have is the practice, right? Like the rituals, like how do we attend to grief every day is just like one of the things that we live with. Because if I am going to live decades into the death of someone that I love, that can't just be that I'm trying to push them out of my consciousness. That's not anybody's goal. So it doesn't, I teach this whole thing, but one of the things that I talk about is what are you instinctively drawn towards to move the energy, to transmute the energy, to shift it and change it? So many people talk about music. So many people talk about art. So many people talk about movement. So many people talk about the earth, like growing things and putting their hands in the earth or hiking or walking or whatever. But coloring is one that comes up a lot. It comes up a lot for adults. And I know 5 years ago we had the whole like mandala craze, but I don't know where it went, because there is something about the mindfulness practice. Puzzles are also another example, or walking a labyrinth, where like you can be in your mind, but you're also doing something. Yoga is another with movement. So I just wanted to say that to you, that you don't hit us heavy with the music and the coloring. It looks like, oh my God, this lady's so cool. Look at what she's got in here. But it's genius. It's like, it's based on neuroscience and grief work. And I was like, I looked at it and was like, oh, she's just giving us some tools, some guidance. This isn't just, hey, this is what this is about. It's, hey, this is what this is about. And will this help you? So if anyone's listening right now and you don't know what your relationship to music is, I want you to just think about it over time. Like when you were a teenager, did you put earbuds in your ear and listen to the same album over and over? Okay. When did you do that? What mood were you in? What was the purpose? Was it so that you didn't have to listen to your little brother? Was it because you were having trouble with a friend? All of that is emotionally driven.
I will tell you, the TLC album, Crazy Sexy Cool.
Yeah.
That album is why I'm still alive.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this, my favorite song I've ever written, which is like choosing your favorite kid. It's very hard, but I do have a favorite. It came out of a dark night of the soul. I just started playing the piano. I have a beautiful green piano in my house. I love it. It's so off key. Makes it even better. And it's in the book, but I just started playing on the piano And I sort of sing, hold on, don't give up before the miracle. And it came out of my mouth. And
keep singing,
I
keep
thought,
singing, keep
wow,
singing.
That's, oh, I might, you just wait. I was like, that is going to encourage other people. But I wasn't even thinking about that. I was like, that came out of my soul for my own soul. And I feel that same way about what I write in the book.
Yeah.
As I was reading the book for the audiobook, you know, for Audible and stuff, my own words were loving on me, you know, and giving me peace. But then as I'm sitting there, I say, this is not the end of your story, only the beginning. So hold on. There's a new song in your heart. And I start banging on the piano. Oh, oh. Just bam, whoa, whoa. Take it up an octave. I'm like screaming. It's probably midnight. I'm alone in my house. And I even have goosebumps now thinking about it. There are times when I thought, I'm not going to survive this. You know, COVID with, at the time, 3 kids and a wife with borderline personality disorder. And I would sing that to myself. Hold on. Don't give up before the miracle. Don't give up before the miracle. Even when I didn't believe it, I would sing it. And I think that pulled me out as well.
I like can't talk. I just want you to keep singing. There's something so holy. So again, like when I'm working with grievers, you know, you have to know what someone's tolerance is around the idea that there is something that stitches us all together. But grief really is that, right? Like it's this human experience. And I don't mean, it doesn't have to be profound loss, although we will all walk that lap, you know, of profound loss. But everybody understands what it means to need a hand holding you at your back, because like it's I said this so many times after my mom died, I do not know how to live. I never lived before without her. I don't know how to live. And I'll tell you right now, I still don't know how to live without her. I just do it. And I've just been doing it, which means at some point I'm going to look back and maybe there'll be a roadmap or there'll be some sort of, but I will tell you the Dear Evan Hansen soundtrack is how I got through my dad dying. I was so overstimulated by everything. I flew back and forth because he was dying of cancer and I flew back and forth to him. And I mean, it's not worth telling the whole story right now, but I remembered having seen the play when it was in previews here in DC. I just one day was like, what was that music? And then I was like, wait, it went to Broadway. And then I looked it up because it wasn't a real play yet. So there was no music to get. So I saw it, I cried, I sobbed and was like, what the hell was that? And then I forgot about it. And then here I am. And that soundtrack still on my phone. If you, it's like, you've listened to, you know, Taylor Swift 2 million times, but I've listened, I have listened to Dear Evan Hansen. And I feel like that's not what Benji Pasternak was meant to do, which was save my life when my dad was dying with a play about, you know, suicidal teenagers, but that is what he did do. And that's that's what I think about. I think about your book has all these entry points. It has all, it's like onion skin. There's so much grief across those pages, but it's grief with like, again, witnessing. It's not just validating, it's witnessing. I see you. I get why these words matter. I get why they can hurt. I also give you permission to come out from underneath them. Yeah. And then you give us music and then you give us processing with the art. It's just this deft, very, and it's not heavy. It's heavy in the sense that we're talking about grief and loss, but it's not heavy in the sense that we're talking, you know, it's got
like
a lot of humor.
Cocktails with a friend. Yeah. My favorite thing to do on the planet is make people laugh. And so that had to be a component of the book. So it's like, right as you're about to just, you know, be depressed because what you read was maybe so dense and sad, I'll throw in a zinger for you.
That's right. I just realized I'm the worst podcast host in the world because I don't even think we said the name of the book, which is, it's not another self-help book. It's this beautiful yellow book. And the secondary title is Finding Gifts in the Midst of Life's Shit. Look at that. And it is, it's just like a delight. It's the kind of book where it's like, you want to hand it to someone and say, pick it up or don't pick it up, but just leave it around because maybe someone else will pick it up. It really feels like a love letter that might be for you or might be for someone else or might be, you know, we don't know. It's going to land where it needs to land. Mm-hmm. And I do. And I just want to say this to you because there were so many parts of it where I was like, this is like the absurdity here. Like, I just knew I was going to love talking to you when I was reading it. Your personality is very much inside it. But I really want to say thank you, because I feel like anytime somebody is using the molten lava that has cooled in their life to build up a hill that we can climb so that we can get some kind of perspective on what's going on for us. A, you didn't have to do it. You had to live it, but you didn't have to turn it into a gift and a hill for other people to climb. And there are going to be people, there are people already that are needed this and had no idea how much they needed it. And that
You're filling my cup, Brent.
Well, look, I mean, I read 188 books specifically on grief and loss, but many of them fell into the category of like humorous or whatever after my mom died. And I probably threw a third of them across the room. This is garbage. And I hate this book, which is how I know people are all across the country throwing my book across the room right now, because that is karma. But I would never say anything bad about those books because they just weren't for me.
Yeah, they were for someone.
Yeah. And that's what I mean is, oh, I always say this. And if my husband were standing here, anytime he's here and I start to do this, he's don't do it. You just make yourself look really crazy. But there's this documentary, which is called Fantastic Fungi, which is all about the mushrooms that, decompose and recompose the earth for us. And it's all the mycelium and, you know, how does the forest, you know, regurgitate its flora? It does it with this unbelievable tiny little filament that breaks the everything down and then everything grows. And to me, I'm like, you tell me that isn't the universe showing us that God exists. Like, you tell me the fact that trees communicate underneath the ground and take care of each other. You tell me that is not proof that there is something that is maybe not holding us, but it is organizing us in a way that we're supposed to play a part. So yeah, whether it's with music or words, or it's such a gift. It's such a gift to do it and to talk about it. And that's how I feel about it. I'm always like, oh, I get to do this crazy thing. I can't believe it. How do people find you?
I love what you're doing. How do people find me? Yes. Okay. Probably the best way is to go to notanotherselfhelpbook.com. Yes.
It's a very good
email
page.
Address. Thank you. Throw your email address in there. I don't spam because I hate being spammed, but you know, I'm doing an interview series this year. So every month we're releasing an interview.
You just did one with Jen Hatmaker.
Yes. And she wrote the foreword to the book. She said, yeah, dear friend. I didn't even
know
she was
another person who was kicked out of Christian community. So you have that like pretty, you know, burn your house down and drive you out of the village. Like
she was one of the first people I came out to when no one knew. At a coffee shop. And then when she was, you know, coming out as affirming with their church, we met about that. So yeah, we have a very beautiful journey. So the website and then, you know, Instagram, Lindsay Kane Leverton, just my name and not an influencer. Maybe have a few followers, but I post stuff sometimes. Hopefully it'll make you laugh. Other than that, I don't buy the book. I would just love
buy the book and also do the review of the book, because authors really like that. Say nice things.
Yes.
Them. So buy the book and then review it.
And then buy Megan's book.
Yeah. Yeah. Also buy mine, but really buy Lindsay's. That is what we're here for tonight, is to do Lindsay's book. Okay. And we'll put all that in the show notes so that people know where to find you. Thank you so much for being here today. I am madly in love with you. I will try to only lightly stalk you, but I can't wait to see what we get to do together in the future.
Same. Oh my gosh. I love that we met. Thank you again.